Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. Thank you for inviting me, James, and the group here. Like James said, my name's Tunde, and I'm a primary school teacher. And this week, it was the start of Black History Month. So I put up a picture of Martin Luther King on the board in front of the class, a class of 39 and 10-year-olds. I even dropped his name by accident, said Martin Luther King. I didn't want to say it, but I did. And said, what do you know about Martin? What do you know about this man and his story? And the kids were like, singer? Like, was he a president? Somebody said, did he say something? Did he say a speech? And then one girl knew a little bit and she told the story of Rosa Parks, but nobody else did. So I got to introduce the children to like the civil rights movement and some kind of soaring ideas of like what happens if there isn't equality and things like that, and take them to talk them about a hero of mine, and even at some points I could hear myself, because like I still quite affected by Martin Luther King, and I could feel myself getting wobbly voiced a couple of times, but I don't think they noticed. But then people do say, never meet your heroes. And I think the reason that they say never meet your heroes is because on closer inspection, things aren't always as good as you hoped. Men kind of let you down. And I remember the train journey when I was reading a biography about Martin Luther King, probably late teens. And as I was reading it, I realised, and to my devastation, and I didn't think I could compute it, but I always realised that Martin Luther King had extramarital affairs, and like not one but several. Even the night he died, he was probably in a hotel room with a lady. And so I remember being like feeling sick to the stomach at that time of like, how could a man that I respect and regard so highly, and in fact is regarded in society so highly, and that do something which I absolutely disrespect, like I hate so much. And so that's what they say, don't never meet your heroes. Now, Israel, the nation of Israel, they had some heroes, but they had one really big hero. That was the God Yahweh. He was their hero because at different times through their existence, he had appeared to them. He would appear over here and say something to somebody, and then in a place over here, there would be like a special event, and he would speak to a man, but always kind of in a haphazard way at the start of their existence. And you could never guarantee, like, yes, let's go and meet with God. Because it was like, well, is he going to appear? Is there going to be an anointed person there? We just don't know. It might be many generations between now and then. But then at some point in their history, Yahweh said to them, he said, I'm gonna dwell with you. And the reason why that's so different is that he said, look, I'm going to live with you. I'm going to stay. When you want to come to meet with God, you can do it. When I want to speak to you, I don't need to create any special set of circumstances. We've got a way that we are going to meet with each other routinely, regularly. They built at certain times, it was in a tent, and then it was in the temple. And in the temple, it was kind of characterized, there were loads of things. It was characterized by God's power. When they first dedicated the temple, then there was like a cloud filled the temple so that nobody could even enter, the people who were supposed to be. It was so powerful. And when people prayed, and they prayed towards the temple or at the temple, their prayers were answered in kind of more unusual ways than they would see like in other places. And it was also a place of God's voice as well. When God wanted to speak to the people, then he would speak from his temple and say, the army that's coming to attack you, well, fight them this way, and they'd get mighty deliverances. Or he'd say, or when they came to him and they said, we've got something to ask for of you, God, or we want to learn, we want to know what you're doing or how we should run our country, they would inquire at the temple. And so it was a place of God's voice. And it was also a place of kind of dedication as well. Everything was done according to the way that Yahweh had ordained it. You didn't roll up to the temple in your, like, you came according to the process. You came in the right way. And so it was a place of his word. It was a place of power. And it was a place of kind of dedication as well. And so, but then over hundreds of years of rebellion and sin and of worshipping other gods, actually the temple was destroyed. They were defeated by another kingdom. And then God, who'd been seeking for a way to connect with people, seeking for a way to connect with his people always, he was left with this conundrum. How am I going to meet with my people? How am I going to connect with them? A new temple was built. It was never quite the same. But it was into that temple that that Jesus walked in. And he said, look, after having a little clash with the authorities there, he said, tear down this temple and I'll raise it up again in 3 days. And they thought, well, that sounds like a very unlikely civil engineering project because it took 46 years to put stone upon stone. But the book of John tells us that Jesus wasn't talking, and even the disciples didn't get it at that point, but the book of John says it actually Jesus wasn't talking about stones on stones. He was talking about his body. His body. So now, in the past, it was a place that people went to, a physical place where people went to meet with God. But when Jesus was walking the earth, if you wanted to know what God was doing somewhere, if you wanted to hear from God, if you wanted to see God, God's works of power, then you would go to Jesus, and you would see from you would meet with God there. You would see what happens when there's a storm and God tells it to be quiet. When there's illness and God tells it to go. And so it was marked the life. Jesus became the new temple where he was, where his physical body was. That was where God was working, or that's where God's words were coming from. And so Jesus was the temple at that time, and his life was marked by dedication in prayer and in learning the scriptures and speaking them in a way which people spoke about Jesus, and they said nobody ever spoke like this man. And they said he didn't just preach, he didn't speak like everybody else. He spoke with authority and with power. So he was that was a new way that God was connecting with people. So that was great. But then Jesus died and he resurrected, and then after 10 days, I think it was, then he ascended to heaven, and then God's left with this problem again, like, how am I going to connect with people now? I had, like, what was these 33 years? And it was, you could come to this man and you'd find out about what God was doing. But now, what am I going to do now? And that is where, that's what we're talking about today. That's what we're talking about with the church. Because... Oh, and in fact, let me just say something else about when Jesus was walking the earth. Is that, yes, all, in all those big ways, in those ways that we think of, the miracles, the healing, the teaching, that people would meet with God. But I also like to think to myself that if somebody wanted to say, what does God think about food? Like, that they would be able to go and look at Jesus and say, how does he do it? And if they thought, well, what does Jesus do with people who he doesn't really get on with, that he doesn't click with? Or what does he do with people when he's tired or suffering or betrayed? All of these kind of much more earthy ways that we might think of. Well, in those cases, you could still look at Jesus. His whole life was the message. Yes, he did works of power and those things that we've written down, but actually you could go and see, what does Jesus think about the future? What does Jesus, what does it feel like to be in a room with Yahweh? Because Jesus was the temple, his body was the temple where people could go to meet with God. But then the book of Ephesians says this verse, and it's been on my mind for some time, and I'm still trying to work it out. It says, Ephesians 1 verse 22 and 23 says this. It says, and God placed all things under Jesus' feet and appointed him to be head over everything to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all things in every way. I'll read it again because just like the rest of Ephesians, it's densely packed, so it takes a second reading. It says, and God placed all things under Jesus' feet and he appointed him, Jesus, to be head over everything to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all things in every way. And so God, who was always concerned about connecting with people, he was always searching for ways to connect with his people. He did it through the temple, he did it through Jesus' body. Now, if you want to know what is God doing, if you want to meet with God, then he has ordained that now you can meet his body, and actually that's the church. And the other thing about it being a body is that it's not like it was, you know, before the temple, where it was like Yahweh might appear somewhere here and then he might appear over there. No, his body speaks of living. It speaks of dwelling. It speaks of remaining. It speaks of, like, regularity. You can go to meet with God. And that's what the church is supposed to be. The fullness bit, which at the end of it says, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all things in every way. So I've wondered on that. What does it mean to be the fullness of him who fills all things in every way? Kind of what I've settled on, I think, is that, like, you can look out on a vast landscape and you can, do you know what? You can look and you can learn some things about God that you can see about his infinity, about his greatness, about his power. You can see a leaf and you can see a tree and his design, and you can learn something about him there. But if we were to say in multimedia terms, that would be just like a grainy, kind of pixelated image with no sound. But the church, I believe, is supposed to be like the HD 3D experience with surround sound and IMAX chairs which rotate until you have the full experience and they spray things at you. Because the church, I believe, is supposed to be where you... It's where you meet with God, in where you see God in the fullest sense, yeah. More than just in a beautiful sunset, which is full of knowledge of God. But in the church, I think we should see it more. And I think, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. So Jesus, when he was here in the body, he did loads of things. He spoke to people, he did miracles, he prayed, and he was devoted to the word. And those things, they're all features of what we do as the church, of his people, as we're his body. And, you know, it should be marked by personal holiness and in conduct and things like that. And those things, do you know, I think those things are actually well covered in preaching and in talking about. So I want to just emphasize something else about his body. I don't know if you've heard about the church being the body of Christ before. I hope that you have. But as I searched it out, I thought, well, how important is it in the New Testament, the church being his body? And as I looked, to my surprise, I suppose, the church is described as his body, or there's comments about us being members, or Jesus being the head, or things like that. I think over 20 times in the New Testament. There are two chapters kind of devoted to it in different letters. And then there are loads and loads of different verses where actually it's just assumed knowledge. One bit of mine is like that I love is where it says, remember the prisoners as if you were chained to them because you too are part of the body. And it's like it was supposed to just be in the back of your mind. You're part of the body with them. And so that affects how you behave. Being the fullness of God, I think, is a bit of a tricky thing. You might think it's a bit daunting, and sometimes I tend to think it might be daunting because you feel like, well, if people are supposed to come and meet God in the fullest sense of the of how it could possibly be, then that puts a heavy, daunting burden on people who might preach or on people who might play. Like, our services have to be, like, I don't know, be like being on Concord. Every need, like... catered for that, the experience. I mean, it feels to me that that's a heavy pressure for us, and certainly as a preacher, I would feel that as a heavy pressure. But I actually don't think it's to do with that. I don't think it's to do with having shiny services of ever increasing kind of luxury or production levels. I think it's something different. We're going to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and that's where I'm going to kind of bring out what I believe God would teach us about being the body, and why I think God mentions it so many times through the New Testament. That it's not, I mean, people fall out over verses, obscure verses that appear once, and they're based some kind of their ideas about God on it. But the idea of the body is there so frequently that it's well worth us learning and studying. So we're going to do that now. So 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 12 to 18 we'll start with. I think I'm going to move slightly to this side just to help me. It says this, it says, the body is... Oh, wait, in fact, I'm going to start at verse 14. So I hope that that's not going to confuse you. Right, well, I'm going to read from here, and hopefully you'll pick up where it is. Now, the body is made up of one, not one part, but of many. If the foot were to say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not, for that reason, cease to be part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not, for that reason, cease to be part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has arranged the parts of the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. Excuse me, I'm suffering a little bit with cold and I have a perennial sore throat. So if I clear my throat an awful lot, but then I apologise. It bothers me more than it bothers you. That's the only thing I can say. So, this passage here, we've got a little bit of an insecurity. Different parts of the body, the ear and the foot, are feeling a little bit blue. I think the ear is like, oh no, like that eye that can do everything. It can see for miles. I can't even see. Like if I put the hand right close to me, I wouldn't be able to see. And never mind, I can't even move the hand to be right close to me. I'm just an ear. And like, feeling like I'm not worthy. I wish, if only I were an eye. And the foot is feeling similarly. But I want to tell you actually that, and actually to those people, or in that situation, actually, God designed it. The verse that I would say to somebody who is feeling like that, or to myself when I feel like that, is this. It's that God has set the parts of the body just as he pleased. And actually, God didn't design us to be all self-sufficient, all perfectly doing things ourselves, independent. It was in God's very design that that we should be weak in some areas, and that should be filled with strength by others, with other giftings, other abilities and talents and resources. I want to give a couple of examples from my own life. When I was graduated from university, I moved to a city called Derby, and I went trying to find a church there. My second week, I went to a church, and it was okay. I wasn't planning to go back. And as I chatted to people, and then as I was leaving, right as I went through the door to leave, I was met by a couple there, Liz and Dave Matthews. And they said, as I was leaving, they said, oh, hello, who are you? This is my second week in the city. I knew nobody there. I said, oh, I'm Sunday. And they said, oh, we're always interested in who God is bringing to our city and for what purposes. And then they said to me, look, within 2 or 3 minutes, they said, why don't you come back home for dinner with us? So I sat down to a roast that day, knowing nobody in the city and not really being a person who could cook a roast, and certainly not cooking a roast for myself, on my own. I was sat down, and then and they introduced me to their teenage boys as well. And then they got out the board games, and I enjoy board games. Here am I sitting, my second week in the city, having known nobody, and then being introduced into this family home. And then they said, oh, we're going on a walk. Why don't you come as well? And so they took me out to the different places and over. And so I had a fantastic day. I had no right to have any of those things. And there was no kind of payment for services rendered or anything like that. It was just... And so that in itself was remarkable. It was wonderful. But at the end, when I was just about, okay, it's about time for me to go, they got out their diary and said, will you come back? Now, I never went to their church. But actually, they invited me back month on month. On month, over in my 10 years in Derby, they invited me back. I calculated it was probably over a month. Yeah, that's right, Max. They invited me over to their place over 100 times for dinner, and like I was new in the city, I didn't drive at the time. They took me to places that I couldn't go on my own, And I remember telling other graduate friends of mine, and I would say to them, they would say, oh, what are you doing tonight? And I'd say, I'm going to my adoptive family. They're going to provide for me. They're going to pray for me. They'll ask me how things are. And these non-Christian people used to say to me, how do you get one of these? How do you get one of these adoptive families? And I was like, well, do you know what? I think that's the church. That's the family of God. That's different parts of the body providing for each other. And like I say, I wasn't doing anything to... there was definitely no payment for services rendered. It was just, well, do you know what? I was just receiving from God who provided through other people for me. So how does God provide... how does God connect with us through the church? Well, he gives blessings to different people that it might be used for the benefit of the whole. I'll tell you one extra little bit about that. So, I mean, I benefited loads, you know, in terms of the weight of food I could describe as being fantastic. But during my time in Derby, I was sent to Montreal for 6 months by my company. And I had such a great time. I was very, very tempted to kind of stay. And after I decided not to, I remember getting onto the plane. I think it was on the plane or just before, and I was feeling a bit dejected. And I kind of felt to myself, well, who would notice if I didn't come back? Who would even notice if I didn't, like, say anything? Who in Derby would know? And that's quite a lonely thought, I'm sure you'll understand. And it came to me, and it came like a kind of joy. It said, do you know what, who would know? Liz and Dave and their boys, the Matthews family, they would know. And I owe it to come back to them, or at least for them to know who I am. So that feeling of belonging that that they gave me, beyond the weight of food and the introduction to new places, that's a kind of priceless thing, isn't it? And so I was just in the position, so I could have been in the position like the, you know, the ear or the foot being like, I don't have these things. I don't have a family. I don't know the area. There's so much. And, you know, on my own, it's very difficult to play good board games. You know, but they provided for me. They took, like, and it wouldn't surprise you if I let you know that they collected other waifs and strays who they kind of, and provided, like, at home for them. So that's wonderful. I'll tell you another family as well. There's a family in our church called Jiffa and Alexandra. What I should tell you first is that I'm a single man, and most of my adult life I've been a single man. And people say to me, they say, oh, we're going here on holiday. Where are you going? And, you know, most of the time the answer is nowhere. So you're welcome to ask me, but, you know, normally the answer is nowhere because, I could go to places. I've got full of interest and intrigue and things and places I would be interested to go, but I wouldn't really, by personality, I wouldn't want to go on my own. I'd rather stay at home with people than to go on my own. And such is my kind of situation in life that, you know, other people are provided for. You know, they go in family groups or they go with partners. And so I could feel like, I'm weak there in many ways I am. But Jiffa and Alexandra, within about 4 months of being within the church, they said, Tunde, we're going to France on our family holiday. Us, our daughter, and our little one who's still in the belly. And why don't you come with us? You love France. We love you. Just come. I tell you, not many people provide for others would open up something like that. A family holiday, that's a private affair, isn't it? But they shared with me. They saw my kind of weakness. And provided for me in that way. And it's right for me to say how good that is because it's not really something that is done very often in other places. So I think in this situation where we're weak, the key thing that we need to do, that learning about the body tells us, that we need to make sure that we're ready to receive, in a position ready to receive. I mean, when I tried to think about how I would preach this loads of times, whenever I was to put in front of people these areas where, you know, I would say I'm weak or I'm needy, yeah, I might say, I depend on others. Do you know what? All the time I wanted to say, but, you know, it's not like that now. Or I'm sure that the Matthews family, they liked me as well. You know, I was good conversation. Or something like, I wanted to make myself strong again. Do you know what I mean? And I wonder if that's a hindrance, actually. I wonder if that's a hindrance to from receiving from others, from valuing the good that God has put in them, and actually from giving thanksgiving back to God. Because we provided everything for ourselves. We'll arrange our own little family. We'll go on a holiday on our own with a group. Oh, I don't know. But do you know, there's a beauty of and actually, I'm sure you can tell it from the way that I tell the story about these families, that I'm thankful to God for these people consistently. So, not only do I receive, but I'm praising God, routinely for the blessing that he has given me through the church. How does God connect with people? Through the church? Well, it's like that, through giving and receiving. There's the only other thing that I might say about this kind of bit is that there is sometimes the feeling, like the ear or like the foot, to feel like inferior, like maybe other people, maybe they always seem to be high up on faith, or they seem to have their prayers answered a bit more, they've got great Bible knowledge, or they've got, or whatever it might be, or their lives, their economic or professional lives, they're sorted, but mine, I might be struggling somehow. And the thing about that is that sometimes that makes you feel like, actually, I don't belong. Maybe it's a thing like I'm not educated like other people, or maybe it's a thing like my life's not sorted, or maybe it's like I'm beset with doubts at different times. But actually, there's a home for those things, because God has set the parts of the body just as he wanted. And there's a place, actually. I want to say the church is a place for those people, the people who feel like I'm weak in a particular area. God's already provided for that in his design of the body. You'll be glad to know, though, that you don't always feel weak, that God sometimes gives you great areas of strength in your life where you feel like you can be a great blessing to people. And I've got a story or two about that as well that I'd like to share. But first of all, we'll just read the next little section of the passage, which is verses 21 through to 26. And then we'll just talk through that. So it says, "The eye cannot say to the hand, 'I don't need you,' and the head cannot say to the feet, 'I don't need you.' On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts that we think are less honourable, we treat with special honour. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty." And then I'm just going to skip to verse 26, where it says, "If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honoured, every part rejoices with it." And so in this situation, you've got a different situation. It's not where somebody's feeling weak, it's actually where somebody's feeling, do you know what, I'm strong. I think, what have we got here? It's the I feeling, I don't need you. I'm self-sufficient. I've got what I need. I can do all these things. You're a little low. You're of less value. And that's one of the big things that we need to worry about and defend against in the places where God has made us strong, because he's made us all a composite of strengths and weaknesses, is that we look down on others. We say, well, they're still struggling with some sins which they should have dealt with by now. Or they've got doubts and worries. Or maybe they're just not polished or socially awkward. Whatever it might be, we might look down on other people and say, do you know, pull your act together. Like, pull your act together if you want to be valuable here. But to those people, I would like to say that this, and I'd like to quote this verse, which says, "Those parts that seem to be weaker are necessary." And in fact, in the verse, in the version that I read to you, it said, "are indispensable." Now, God has made the body so that actually the bits which we might look on, and other people might look on and say, we could trim that and say, this person's not adding any value, or this person's dead wood, let's get rid of that, that's just slowing us down. Well, God designed the body to be like that. And actually, those parts of the body are indispensable. Now, I told you that I would tell you one part, an example of a story from when I was strong, and it's my delight to do so. But before I do that, I did want to say that for some of us, it might even be difficult to say that there are some areas where I'm strong. It might even be difficult. It seems like, and actually in our culture, we don't like it very much for people to know that they've got strength, and for me to say, well, God used me in this way, and to rejoice over it, is actually, that's a tricky thing for lots of people. So I just want to say that God's made us with strengths as well, and that I'm going to do it nonetheless, no matter if it makes you uncomfortable. But that, I think that's a thing that God would do in our hearts. The time I'm wanting to tell you about is a time when I went to, it was when I was in Montreal, actually. I went to a church there. In fact, both of my stories come from first time going to a church. And I went to this church, and I went in the evening, and it was called People's Church. And I went there, and the sermon was good, it was nice. And then the service finished, and I think I looked around me, and basically the room emptied as if it had just become like a no man's land, or like as if there had been a bomb threat or something. And I thought to myself, and actually I was indignant actually at that. I was a new person in the city, and I was trying to, like, wanting to connect with people, wanting to meet people. And, you know, in that situation, you're very weak. You depend on the grace of others. You depend on people coming to talk to you. And actually, I went home that evening, and it really got my goat. I was indignant, and it's just so far away from what I believe the church to be. I don't believe sitting next to each other is anything like showing the fullness of Him who fills all things in every way. So I went home, and I said to myself, in fact, I said to God, we've got to do something. I'm going to that church again. We've got to do something about it. I prayed about it all the time, and I worked out, well, you know what? Nobody's going to listen to me because they don't know me. I'm not going to be able to preach. So that you can cast that off. And actually, in some people might even say, well, you know, you're a transient, aren't you? I don't even, you know, I'll measure my kind of how much of myself I give to you, or how much investment I give in our relationship, because, you know, you'll be gone. You're pretty soon. And even I used to say that to people as well. Yeah, talk to this person better, because in a month I'm off. But actually what I decided is, I think I know a bit, had something to say about what the church is supposed to be like, what the body of Christ is supposed to be like. And I had actually from God a conviction that something had to change. And apart from that, I had just lots of time. I was in a city where I didn't have any responsibilities. So this is what I did. I went to every single service that I possibly could, morning and evening. I would turn up 15 minutes early so that I could talk to people and engage people, and that wasn't the culture there. And I would stay until they kicked me out to meet with people, and I would draw people in, the frostiest people that I could find. I would try to break down their resolve by, like, persistence. I prayed as well, which is something that if you're going to serve God and bless others, then that's got to be essential. But that's what I did. And actually, slowly, things started to change. Towards the end of services, people didn't disappear so quickly. And actually, later on, towards the end of services, people started to congregate and started to gather. And then a little bit later on, people started to gather and say, shall we go for lunch? And so instead of this kind of situation where it had been like a kind of nuclear a kind of explosion had gone off and people couldn't wait to get out, there started to be a little bit of fellowship, a little bit of community. People started to relate to each other. And my friends there, they started to mock me a little bit. They used to tease me and say, hello, my name's Tunde. I'm from England. What's your name? Because they saw me doing this time and time and time again. And they even said to me, they said that sometimes they would stand back with me and say, teach me, who should I go and speak to next? Because when I went to a service, I didn't pray, God, I pray that the preacher might say something I really like. I pray that we might sing a hymn that I like. I used to go and I used to say, God, give me three people to speak to. And I used to sit from the services and I would pay attention to what they were saying. But I would also be saying, this person that I can see over in the corner of my eye, they are not getting out of here without me speaking to them today. And after that, I've got a next priority list, and I'm going to work through them. My highlight, probably, or my proudest moment, is when I was chatting after the service, and there was the head pastor's daughter and the worship leader, and they were kind of nearby. And I thought, very, like, foolishly, and I thought I'd be I thought I'd be kind of ridiculous. I said, oh, do you guys know each other? And I introduced them to each other. Head pastor's daughter, one of the worship leaders, similar age, both girls. And they were like, no, we don't know each other. And I laughed out loud at them. I was like, oh, this is, you lot are killing me. How can you not know that in a family, in the body of Christ? We're supposed to be connected. And they told me, well, she's like, later they said to me, well, the head pastor's daughter, she's painfully shy, you know. And I was like, but that's fine. So she might have some kind of social weakness that she feels holds her back. But God has given me a strength there, and he's given me a courage to do it. So I went and I broke down her resolve. And she started coming to the Sundays, to the youth groups and to the... So I'm really proud of, and actually, I'm really proud of what God did through me there. And actually, after 6 months, when on the Sunday when I was leaving, they said 30 people gathered after church to come to a restaurant to say goodbye to me. And they said, Tunde, you've been such a blessing to our church. And I'd never preached, I'd never prayed in a service, I'd never done anything of any leadership. Nobody ever said to me, this is your role. Yeah. God gave me a thing to do. Yeah. He gave me some skills. I mean, I'm quite kind of chatty and confident and things. And I sometimes feel like I connect with people well. And I just thought, I'm going to serve God in that. I think what I'm saying is, in the strengths that God has given you, don't wait for anyone to say, invite you and say, oh, please come and do this for us. Please come and have a title. Just in whatever way you are strong, in whatever strengths God has given you, just realise that it's not for you, it's for us. And so if God has given you a strength in, if you've got like great knowledge, if you've known God over time and you've got things where God has done for you, then that's for us. Make sure that you use it to disciple people. If you've kind of financially stable and rich, you know, there's so much in the Bible about that's not for you. You do good and share. If you feel like, actually, I've not got anything except I've got a car and I've got a house, then use those things to... there are loads of people who need lifts to different places. There are loads of people like I was who are lonely, who need to be invited into a home. If you've got a good relationship, then that's great. Congratulations. But God hasn't just given that to you just for your own enjoyment. Make that relationship a home for others to invite people into. And so I think I'm just kind of coming towards the end here. I think what I'm just kind of saying is that if we're going to think like a body, then we're not going to be able to be independent. I've got all my own strengths and I've got my own weaknesses and I need to be self-sufficient. We need to start to think like a body to provide for each other. I think the way that I'll finish actually is I'm going to leave a little bit of reasoning behind and just be a bit kind of reflective. It's that in the temple, the physical building of the temple, they used to burn incense morning and evening to God. It was a type of incense that they couldn't find anywhere else. It was illegal to have that same incense. And so imagine over years and years, morning and evening, of this incense being burned in this place. Imagine that. Imagine the fragrance in that place. All of the furnishings would start to smell of it. All the people who spent any significant time would start to smell of it. And I like to think that a blind man would be able to go and say, do you know what? Not because of anything I can see or before anyone says a word, that he starts to know I'm in the presence of God. And I know I'm being a kind of little bit reflective or poetic about it, but I like to think that being the fullness of him who fills all things in every way is a bit like that. That on a Sunday, before a word is spoken, before a prayer is prayed, or a song, a chord is struck, or a preacher preaches, that people should come and they should feel something's different here because of the way that these people wouldn't normally talk to each other, these two types of people. but they found a home. They're so different that they wouldn't. Or when we see people who are really gifted, or, you know, would be the popular people and would gather towards themselves an entourage in normal life, but they find them serving, doing menial tasks just to bless other people, or associating with the most lowly. I think that people would actually, and I even do think people see that, or they hear the stories about the church, and they feel, and they start to know the presence of God. Not necessarily, not even from the words or convincing or arguments or thinking that you might forward, but just from that kind of fragrance of God in a room of people. And so, actually, I don't think the pressure on a service, the pressure on a preacher, on that's not what I'm talking about. For us to be the fullness of Him who filled all things in every way, it's about our relationships. It's about how each other, we provide for each other way outside of a service. This is just a kind of celebration of all of those relationships. But it's about all those relationships that we've talked about. I think I'll finish there. I don't have anything else I wanted to say. Do you want to come? In fact, maybe I could pray, actually. I will pray just to finish. Living God, we want to bless you. We want to thank you that you've put us in a church. Thank you that you've provided for us in so many ways that we've received from the good things that you have given to our brothers and sisters for us. And thank you that we've been able to bless others as well with the good things that you've given to us, to work with us for others. And Lord, we just want to say that we want to be your body. We want to be in a great way. We want you to, we want the fullness of the glory of God to be in our community. Please, will you show us how? Amen.
Amen.